Hello and welcome to Databook, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. The Databook podcast focuses on technology, innovation, and the transformation of healthcare. In this episode, we talk with Freddie Feldman, the Director of Voice and Conversational Interfaces at Wolters Kluwer Health. He works with designers and researchers to create and refine voice technologies to help hospitals engage their patients. He talks about using this technology to make sure patients are getting the care they need, and hopefully reducing complications and readmissions. It's a very interesting discussion, so thanks for joining us. Thank you very much for joining us today. We are talking with Freddie Feldman, the Director of Voice and Conversational Interfaces at Wolters Kluwer Health. Freddie, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Good to meet you.
Well, why don't we start with just give us like a little bit of a description of the work that you're doing for our audience who may not be as familiar. So talk a little about the work that you're doing.
So Wolters Kluwer Health, as a company, as an organization, provides trusted clinical technology, evidence-based solutions for clinicians, patients, researchers. That includes Wolters Kluwer Health includes an organization, a company called UpToDate, which is, if you are a physician, especially, you're probably familiar with UpToDate. It is the gold standard for clinical decision support, empowers clinicians to make the best care decisions. And so within this organization, I am at EMI, which is the patient facing part of UpToDate. We blend content with personalized delivery and tracking and measurement. So we help providers and payers connect with patients to improve outcomes. So my team is the VCI team. I shorten it because it's kind of long, the Voice and Conversational Interfaces team. and we have a really talented group of voice and conversational designers, builders, testers, researchers, that work to improve and create voice technologies for patient engagement. So our main products, we have our IVR phone calls. These are outbound IVR calls. It's not inbound that you might be familiar with where, you know, we're a call center scheduling and routing and things like that. But we're calling out to patients, reaching out to them in a couple different ways. And my team, scripts and builds all those calls.
I'm guessing you're seeing more and more interest from providers, from health systems that are mm-hmm. interested in this technology for their operations.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the technology is really cool because it allows these care teams to expand and scale without having to add FTEs, right? So like we're able to reach out to follow up with patients post-discharge in a way that a live team of humans couldn't do, right? So they're real interested in this for sure, as everybody's pinched nowadays.
It's obviously being used more widely. Do you expect to see the growth really to accelerate, say, in the next year or two, as more systems, you know, continue to grapple with some of the staffing issues as you alluded to?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's been growing pretty steadily. We've been running the IVR programs for about 10 years now. So we've done about 17 million plus phone interactions, probably getting closer to 18 million by now. It's just, we're always exploring new avenues, right? And things we can do with these calls, things we can do with the voice. It's always expanding. It's pretty cool.
What are some of those things that you can do with these calls? Like, I want to talk about some of these things.
Sure. So there's two types of calls that we make. So there's our ME Journeys, which is like a longitudinal program. This is where we call a patient multiple times to check in on them. So this is post-discharge typically. We're adding chronic care management journeys in the future as well. It used to be called transition because it used to help patients transition from the hospital back home. Right. So, you've left the hospital because you were there, you have heart failure, We're going to call you every day. Your doctor will enroll you in this program through the integration with the EHR. They'll prescribe the program to you, and you'll start getting calls day one post-discharge, and you'll get them almost every day for like either 30 or 45 days. And so we have those types of programs. And then there's based on your responses, and these are voice driven, right? This isn't press one and press two kind of thing. This is having a conversation on the phone with a voice interface. So we call you, making sure, do you have your follow-up appointment scheduled? Do you have all your medications? Do you know how to take them and are taking them as directed? In some cases we ask, like for our COPD program, how many times in the last 24 hours did you use your rescue inhaler? In the heart failure program, we're going to ask you to weigh yourself. What was your weight today? Because we're looking for trends, spikes in weight, right? For water retention purposes. And so there's flagging on the reporting that goes, that comes out of those calls. So your care team gets a report every day, and depending on your responses, we may flag something as a red flag or a yellow flag, which might require or recommend a call from a human from the care team. So those are our journeys. And then on our outreach, ME outreach side, we have like a single call that we'll make to a patient, but many patients at a time, right? So it's sort of like a phone blast from a hospital. And those typically are appointment reminder types of things where it's, it's really important for you to get a mammogram. Have you gotten a mammogram in the last 2 years? Right. And then if they say yes, great. Do you remember approximately, what month did you get that? And things like that. And that can report back to the care team, but also then route to a call center. We can transfer the call. If you haven't had a mammogram in 2 years, and we really recommend you should look into that. Would you like to talk to somebody right now? We can transfer you. And so that blast may go out to 10,000 patients in an area from the hospital, patients that have been patients of that hospital over time. So we'll call all of them, and we'll throttle those calls so that we intelligently call them rather than just blast out 10,000 calls. Because if there's a transfer on that call, we have to make sure that we don't overwhelm the call center, right? So we have to flatten the curve on that in that respect. So we, have a formula for really slowing down those calls so that they all get made with the goal of, getting those transfers to happen. The goal of the journeys is to really lower readmissions and educate the patient. And on the outreach, it's there's various goals, kind of depends on the campaign, but we have all kinds of, get your vaccinations and make sure we do series completion on your vaccine, right? So you've got your first shot for Shingrix, and it's really important to get that second one to get full immunity and stuff like that. And so we do those types of campaigns as well.
Is there any initial resistance at first from the patient side when they're getting a call? They think it's personal, obviously, even though it's a conversational AI, it's not like a human being that's calling. Do you get sometimes the patients that are sort of annoyed and just want to talk to a person?
I haven't heard reports like that. The voice that you hear on these calls is not like Alexa, right? So this isn't a TTS, text-to-speech synthetic voice. This is a human recording it. And we feel that really conveys the empathy that's necessary in these types of calls. The voices, we can talk about that at some point. But the voices we use are found to be trustworthy, empathetic, supportive, knowledgeable. It's not sort of this like dead-eyed robot that's that's engaging with you. Patients really enjoy the calls, actually. And we've heard reports of on those longer series that the patient's upset when it ends that she stopped calling, right? Like she doesn't call me anymore. And so people really do form that bond, that connection with the voice, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's funny to hear about patients getting bumped that they're not getting these calls. Yeah. It's like,
exactly.
Obviously you talked about the virtual goals, not just patient engagement, which obviously is a big enough thing, but driving down readmissions too, like making sure people are, either taking their medications or getting their follow-up appointments. So is that where some of the real benefit of this is coming in terms of making sure that the patients are getting some of that follow-up care after discharge and aren't just slipping through the cracks?
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's the problem, right? Like if you were going to have a human call everybody, it is like throwing a mess of Jell-O up in the air and trying to catch it in your fingers. You get a bunch of it, but a lot of it's going to slip through your fingers. And who's not going to get that follow-up call that they really need? So this really allows you to blanket everything, you know, all of your patients with these follow-ups so that you can make sure that they're all covered.
Every health system's under increasing pressure to trying to reach out to more diverse communities and trying to reach out to them in culturally competent ways and inclusive mm-hmm. and sensitive ways. How does this mesh in with that? Because I think that's, I mean, certainly not just even talking about people who speak Spanish, but I mean, like in New York, there's literally 100 different languages spoken in the city. So how do you kind of work with literally dozens of different languages?
You know, it's a challenge. So when it comes to inclusion and engaging with all kinds of patients, you know, we have a big initiative. I've been kind of on my soapbox for the last couple of years now. But we 3 years ago, we added actually a second voice to our programs, because originally we had, for branding purposes and because of the limitations in our abilities to just provide multiple voices, the idea was let's have one voice for all of our programs. It'd be very consistent. And it worked for us for a long time. And then we realized it was like not every patient is going to connect with that voice. And so we did the voice on our calls was her name is Deb. We did add a second voice, Kristen, who is Black. Deb is white. And I think that was, you know, already just in that decision was like a big step for us in diversifying the voices. And so we've been working with Deb now for 3 years. And we're actually now in the process of conducting a study, a case study to measure and quantify the effectiveness of racially matching the voice you hear in that voice interface with the patient's race. And so we're partnering with a hospital system, and we're sending out those calls actually pretty much as we speak. And so we're going to be tabulating all of that data pretty soon. And then we'll be able to really show you not just, oh, we know in our gut, this is the right thing to do, because there's lots of patients out there and not everybody looks the same. But now we can show you the difference, right, in engagement and connection that the patients are having with these voices. And the hope is to expand that, right? Like, so that's just one other voice, but there's more than just two types of voices out there. And so you have to take baby steps, obviously, and you have to, you know, work within your own limitations and resource constraints and things like that. So you can't just add 100 different languages and voices. We do offer many of our programs in Spanish and have been adding Spanish versions of our existing journeys throughout the year. This has been a big year for us for adding Spanish actually too. And so those are, you know, that's the most requested other language aside from English. Excuse me. And so Spanish and then diverse voices are really what we're looking at, you know, for increasing that inclusion and the feeling of connection that the patients have with the voices on the calls.
Well, you said you've been on the soapbox for a couple of years. This sounds like something you're very passionate about in terms of representation and inclusivity in these technologies.
Yeah, I think, you know, the presentation I give, I've been at HIMSS and Vive and all those, and talking about I play this super cut, right? Like I put together this audio clip compilation of like all of these voice interfaces that we've heard for like the past 40 years, maybe 50 in television and film, right? Like HAL in 2001 and Kit in Knight Rider and Jarvis in Iron Man. They're all white voices. I play like, I don't know, 12, 15 voices, and they're all white voice actors. And there's no voices of color. And when you finally do hear a voice of color, they're character voices. It's Samuel L. Jackson and Mr. T. And those aren't serious voices that people and definitely patients want to talk to when it comes to sensitive and potentially even embarrassing information that can come up in some of these conversations, health related conversations.
Are you seeing some good reception to that idea, the importance of having more representation and inclusion in voice technologies and in engagement?
Oh yeah, for sure. I think I've left some of these conferences. You know, I finish a presentation and people come up to me and they're just like choked up, right? Like they're like, finally someone's saying it. Like we've been, and these tend to be Black people who are like, I finally feel like there's some representation in what's going on here. And it's not just all this one voice, right? And so they've been very receptive, obviously. But the, you know, I've had lots of people come up also and be like, well, where is this voice or where's my voice, right? Because I'm Indian or Latin, and you know, where's my voice? And we're like, well, we're working on that, right? So our next voice actually that we're looking at adding is a Latinx voice, speaking in English, but with a, you know, with a Latin accent. And so that's, again, we're slowly expanding in, you know, there's technical issues when you just keep adding voices to these programs, right? So that's always a challenge that we you know, we're willing to work with, because I think it's important to be able to add as many voices as we can.
With some of these voice technologies for outreach, you mentioned a number of different areas where, you know, it makes sense in the follow up and, you know, checking with patients after the discharge or seeing if they are on track for their screening or if they've missed a screening. Are there areas where it's especially effective or that you really see that payback in terms of the investment of effort?
Well, we've been working like on it, it goes topic to topic, right? And so obviously in general, it's a great idea and it works. But then there are these times where we are approached by a hospital and they want to do an outreach campaign about a certain topic. And so one example we have is, you know, this hospital came to us and wanted to do a campaign regarding a prostate cancer screening, right? So we hadn't yet done one of those campaigns. We do have our other product at Emmy is Engage. It's Emmy Engage, which are multimedia videos, which also, by the way, I don't want to leave them out, utilize the same voices that we use on our IVR programs. And they are also all about diversity, diversifying their animated videos, the illustrations, everything is as diverse as can be. And it's pretty amazing what they've been able to do to really show quite a bit of representation in those videos. So someone came to us though and asked for this prostate cancer screening outreach campaign, and we have videos around the subject, but we don't have we hadn't done an outreach campaign. So the first thing we thought about with this topic is who's most affected by this, and it's Black men, right? 1 in 4 Black men will develop prostate cancer in their lifetime, as opposed to 1 in 8 white men, right? So we're like, all right, so this we have to like, we really need to shift and make sure that we target Black men. And so what's one way of doing that is having a Black male voice on our programs, which we didn't currently offer. So we did go out and find another voice. So we have a Black male voice voicing that campaign. So that was already like a big step in making sure that we're like connecting with the patients in the right way. And then the next thing that we did was we started to rewrite our script. You know, the client provided us, the hospital gave us a first draft of a script, a proposed script, and like, hey, we'd like to reach out about this and say this. And we're like, okay, but let's make sure that we use the terms in the right way and think about this in the right way. Because the first thing was, it was talking about, oh, you should really talk about prostate cancer screening. And it's really important if you're in a high risk group, and that group would be like this and blah, blah, blah. And then they said, well, it's a blood test. I'm like, okay, you got to lead with blood test, right? Like that's the big selling point of this screening now compared to the old test, which people shied away from. Guys didn't want that test. It's a digital rectal examination, right? This is a blood test. They're already taking blood when you're at the doctor almost every time anyway, right? So they're adding it on. So let's mention that off the bat before we almost even say prostate cancer. We're talking about a cancer screening that's a blood test. It's for prostate cancer. And you might be at risk because of this. So it's super easy for you to just do this, right? Like, and so we really changed it around to empower the patient. And take their health into their own hands, sort of thing, rather than just, oh yeah, this is really important for you, and you know, I'm going to recommend this test that you're really not going to love. Like, oh, actually you will like it. It's just a blood test. You know what I mean? Like, you've lost them. You only have them on the call for maybe 30 seconds, a minute. You got to get to it real quick and not lose them. You got to treat them almost like you're trying to catch a rabbit. Like, if you just charge ahead, they're going to bolt. So you gotta finesse it, but rather quickly.
That's really interesting. The example you just discussed, is that a common mistake sometimes health systems make with their engagement efforts, like whether it's voice technologies or other things? They're just like you said, they sort of bury the lead. Like, you know, it's not a simple blood test. It's not the more uncomfortable test you might be thinking of in your head. Is that a problem just generally that health systems sometimes make, that where they don't really understand how to convey information quickly that can be easily understood by patients?
Yeah, I mean, there's two things. The first one is like health literacy level. Like, that's the first issue that typically comes up when a proposal comes to us, right? Where hospital is like, hey, we're going to talk about this. And then they're using all of these terms. I'm like, I got to look these up. You know what I mean? If I have to look them up, I can't say this to a patient over the phone, because they're not going to get it. So we have to make sure we put it at what we sometimes say is sixth or seventh grade reading level. Obviously they're not reading here, but as an understanding level. Right. And so we'll replace terms like, even just physician, and we'll say, or provider. We get a lot of those where we're like, your provider, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, my provider, like, like most patients are not going to really know what it's like, my doctor. Oh, okay. Yeah. Doctor. You know what I mean? And they're just slight shifts. It's almost like code switching that they're not able to do, that the clinicians are not able to code switch like that, right? You gotta lower that literacy level, that understanding level is the first thing. And then, right, they're not, when it comes to the modality, especially, they're not as familiar with it. They don't realize, listen, we gotta get to it. We don't have them for a long period of time. This is not sitting in an office face to face with someone. This is over the phone, and you gotta get to it. And you can't bury the lead, right? So, like, it's really important. It's part of what we do, right? Like, is that we are the experts in the modality, in the voice interface, but also being sort of backed by up to date. We have that gold standard of like the best information, the most up to date info that we can deliver, and then we just have to use our internal translator to translate that into a lower health literacy level.
Well, I would think one appealing factor for these voice technologies and, you know, some of these outreach efforts for hospitals, like, these can, you don't need a smartphone to get these type of calls. I mean, it's not like the it requires you to have an app and then to go through five different steps and click and click and click and click and then click a couple more times. I mean, it's, if you're using these type of things, as long as somebody has a phone, you have the potential to reach the patient. So is that especially appealing to hospitals and health systems?
Definitely. I mean, the phone rings and you know what to do with it. You answer it, right? Like, you pick it up. You take the call and you just talk. There are no apps. There's nothing, no settings or anything like that. It's really pretty easy to use. And especially for the older population, they're very familiar with the phone, right? Like, there's no question about it. Now, when you start to skew younger, you have an issue with people just not answering the phone, right? picking up those calls. And so that's has been a challenge. And it's something we continue to work through. And like, when it comes to something like those longitudinal programs where we know we're going to be calling this patient every day, part of it has to do with education from the care team side, right? Like, when they enroll the patient in these calls, don't just do it and not tell them, but it's really let them know, hey, you're going to start getting calls tomorrow from this system, from this thing. It's easy. It only takes a few minutes. Just answer the call. It's really important to answer those calls. And patients do. We have a pretty high engagement rate on those journeys, the journeys calls of like 70% or something like that. And so, like, that's not as challenging as on like the outreach side, when the patient isn't necessarily expecting the call to answer it. And, you know, there's things we're working on to be able to notify them via text message that a call is going to be coming in, things like that. So there's things we're working on. We're trying to sort of mix these modalities, mix these different communication methods to really reach the patients as best we can. But yeah, I think it's not hard to explain. It's your phone's going to ring, you answer it. And you know, the hospitals love it.
When you mentioned about the young people, because I occasionally will get the phone call on my phone and I don't recognize numbers, like, yeah, it's going to go to voicemail, which is,
Yeah.
you know, something I need to deal with. How much of a problem is that for some of those younger folks that just, like, if they don't know the number, they're not picking it up?
It's an issue. But I mean, we do leave voicemails. So we do let you know, and then we'll try back. So that's another thing. So like, if we call you at 9 in the morning and you don't answer it, we leave you a voicemail so that when we call you again, like at noon, you're more likely to answer it because you see, oh, okay, this is for the hospital and they want to make sure I have this or whatever, that I have refills on this medication that I'm supposed to be taking or whatever the call is about. We don't leave, PHI is a, and HIPAA is a big thing with what we do also. And so we do not leave in the voicemail, any PHI or reason for the call, but we at least say that we're calling from the hospital, with an important health message. And we'll try back later, that kind of thing. So, the engagement definitely skews older on the answering of those calls, but we get all age ranges participating.
What other advice would you offer to health systems that are trying to engage their patients to from voice technologies? What else should they be thinking about?
I think if they're writing their own, to really keep the patient in mind and don't think like a doctor, but think like a patient. And that comes with anything though. So like, even when we're working with a client and we're writing the script, sometimes we even get pushback, from like, oh, do you really think they would get that? And we're like, yeah, I think they would. It's just something we have to build up, you know, with our clients. We build up that trust that we know what we're talking about. So I think it's just have an open mind and always really think about what the patient might be going through, and what the patient might actually understand. My wife and I have been watching this medical drama TV show. I won't mention what it is. It's a newer one though, not the old one that we love. But it's amazing when I keep seeing them, like, on, it's a TV show, it's not real, but it's probably indicative of what's really happening, where they're constantly explaining things to patients using these terms. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, it's not even over the phone or in a pamphlet or whatever. This is just talking, and the patient's going through, like, imagine what the patient's going through. They were just told they, you know, have this wrong with them. And now you're throwing all these terms. They can't understand what you're saying if you don't boil it down to, like, here's what's going on, here's what's going to happen, and here are your choices, let's say, and use those sort of low health literacy level terms, right? Don't use the medical jargon that you're used to. And it's not easy, but you have to code switch. You have to speak to your audience. And that goes for anything in your care, right? It's not just on these interfaces, but that goes anytime you're sort of interfacing, even in person, with a patient, that's really important to keep in mind.
Well, that sounds like some good perspective to leave with, but thanks so much for taking the time today. We really appreciated the conversation, and I think there's a really interesting look at some of the ways that hospitals and health systems can engage with their patients differently. So thanks for joining us today.
Excellent. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Databook, a podcast by Chief Healthcare Executive, a brand of MJH Life Sciences. You can subscribe to Databook wherever you get your podcasts. For the latest news, insights, and analysis of the healthcare industry, visit chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and X, the platform formerly known as Twitter. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. Take care.